This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 190 for September 2nd, 2009. On today's show, we sign on for the Champions Online launch, ask to PhysX or not to PhysX, ponder PAX, the Penny Arcade Expo, and Stardock CEO Brad Wardell joins us for a post-game talk about yesterday's PC Gamer versus Stardock Demigod matchup. All that, plus listener Q&A coming up sooner rather than later. I'm your host and PC Gamer Reviews editor, Dan Stapleton. And with me today are Previews editor, Evan Lottie.
Podcasting on a Wednesday.
It is unnatural and unholy, isn't it? And our producer, Andy Bauman.
You're telling me it's unnatural.
We appreciate you shifting your schedule around for us, Andy.
No, actually it worked out perfectly. I sort of took on some new roles at work, and it has me leaving work early, so it's no problem at all.
Oh, nice. Well,
yeah, I start work at 6 a.m., though, which sucks.
Well, congratulations on your career advancement.
I wouldn't call it an advancement.
Lateral movement?
Yes.
There you go. Congratulations on that.
Yeah congrats.
But yeah, we're a day early here because a bunch of us are going elsewhere tomorrow. It's my birthday tomorrow, so I'm out of here.
Oh. Happy birthday. But,
yeah, thank you. And Evan, you're heading out for PAX, right?
I am en route tomorrow, yes.
All right, okay. So,
that's cool.
So we're doing this today. I guess we might as well kick off with Evan talking about his anticipation for PAX and what he'll be seeing.
Yeah, certainly. It'll be a little lighter, I think, than last year, unfortunately, because of, you know, the huge games that were coming out last year, Fallout 3 and whatnot. But I think, let's see, in terms of the games being shown, the events.
Well, Left 4 Dead 2 is there, right?
Left 4 Dead 2 is there. They're going to be showing off the carnival theme level. I'm forgetting the name at the moment, and I haven't been able to play that yet. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. I know there's like clown zombies in there. Going to get to shoot those guys up. Probably play with a cricket bat and whatnot.
Yeah, you might get to see the spitter in action.
Yeah, certainly. I hope so. A lot of people are really, really excited about the Star Wars The Old Republic live demonstration. Kind of the first, what they're saying is a lengthy demonstration, hour-long thing that they're doing of the game, hopefully showing off a lot of stuff there.
The 20-minute demonstration that came out before, which was very impressive. It actually got me much more excited about it than I had been. And you were saying it?
I was going to say, if people want to look up the schedule, say, like I do, I want to see what the schedule of events are. Is there something posted about like what panels and stuff?
Yeah, paxsite.com/schedule.pdf.
Oh, good.
Is where you want to be.
I know what I'm most excited for is sort of more the fan service media stuff. Like, I'm sort of excited for this game's GFW radio reunion. And there's like the Totally Rad Show is doing like a panel. And it's totally like not really a game company doing anything special, but it's something that I'm really excited about. And
I think most of the GFW guys now work for game companies. So.
Well, yeah, that's absolutely true. But I don't know, Evan. What do you, PAX? You know, E3 is more where you get the demonstrations as a media guy. What would you say PAX is?
It's community outreach. It's an opportunity for publishers to speak directly with the most hardcore of hardcore gamers, really, or the consumerist gamers, however you want to put it. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the panels are kind of self-serving. Honestly, I'm not interested in, you know, no disrespect to the former GFW guys, but you know, they've been out of the scene for how long, and I don't know.
Well, they're not out of the scene, but they're in their own little compartments.
It was special. It was a special thing. So,
but are there any panels you are looking forward to seeing, Evan?
How can we make gaming communities suck less? That's an interesting one to me.
Where's that one?
On Friday at 2:30 in the Raven Theater. But, yeah, I mean, honestly, like I was saying, a lot of these are sort of self-serving, you know, live taping co-op, which, you know, is cool for people that are already fans of it, the Guild 2 screening, you know, different webcomic artists showing how they do things. But I'm honestly just mostly going there to hang out with industry people that I don't get to see all the time, only at conferences, and to hang out with a lot of my e-friends, which we, I keep using that phrase over and over again, and I don't like it. But I mean, I play games with these people, you know, these dozen or so people that I only get to see once or twice a year, and like yourself, Andy, like Andy Salisbury, and it's a really great opportunity to connect with them and socialize and be somewhere where you feel celebrated.
You know, Evan, only you have the power to stop using the phrase e-friend.
I need a synonym. I don't really have one.
I-friend? No.
I-friend.
No, that's worse.
But
don't say that.
In terms of game demos, I'm going to get to see, going to get to talk to Ron Gilbert about Death's Bank and play some of that, I think, on Saturday, which is definitely exciting. It's kind of, they had the first reveal on that earlier this week, first set of screenshots come out, and they're very eager to talk to about it. And, I'm sure you'll see some more coverage in the following month.
Cool. Yeah, we will, I guess we'll have you back on next show, having actually seen it. So.
Indeed.
And talk about it then. Yeah. So getting on with the news, yesterday, Champions Online officially launched to all, not just pre-order customers anymore. Everybody can get in now. Evan, I know you got in last night.
Hell yeah.
I was playing a bit for the pre-launch days for the pre-order customers. Andrew, are you in that?
No, MMOs and me just don't have the right amount of ingredients mixing together, such as time.
Mostly, yes. Just don't have chemistry, huh?
Yeah, you know?
But I was having some fun with it. I guess on the day, like yesterday, they patched it and added and like nerfed a lot of stuff. So a lot of people who were running around kicking butt, all of a sudden, like a few henchmen are wailing on them. So it's kind of a sudden shift. And that's had a few people up in arms. And, you know, every MMO is going to have, you know, it's kinks in the first week or two. So it's difficult to say that this has been a rocky launch. I don't think it has. I think I haven't heard any problems about lag or anything no significant number of people having lag. So I mean, all things considered, it's a fairly smooth launch from what I've seen.
Right. In terms of the experience itself, moving from beta, I was listening to some guys that put out a Champions Online podcast. It was their first episode, of course. And they were saying, you know, moving from the beta to the retail product was very smooth. One of the big changes people are sort of talking about, good or bad, was they nerfed all the travel powers. There's the speed that you move. So when you have a travel power activated, in other words, super speed or super jump, they nerfed that by 15% to reduce lag, I guess. Which, I mean, the thing is, like, a lot of the zones are very big to accommodate, you know, this vast amount of movement. So that seems like a pretty significant oversight, if you can call it that, to make that kind of change post-beta. But I don't know. I need to spend more time with it. It feels great to me. I really enjoyed it.
And Cryptic has responded and said, you know, we are watching and collecting data. You know, just keep playing. And that's where they get the data so they can make changes accordingly. The MMO balance is a very difficult, very tricky job. So just, you know, give them a little time. They'll iron it out, I'm sure. And in the meantime, it seems like it plays pretty well to me. Evan, did you have any good times in there last night?
I had a great time. I jumped in with my friend Phil, who is out in Georgia.
Shout out to Phil.
Maybe it's Alabama. Shout out to Phil. And so we remade characters based on this Sega Genesis RPG that we both like called Shining Force. Anyway. And we went through, we both got to level 8, so we got to the second zone. And the one thing I noticed from when we played it for our preview, Dan, that had changed is, so after you push through the first zone, Millennium City, and you complete all that, you know how you get equipped, you choose your travel power and you level up, basically?
Right.
So what they did is it created a new area called the Powerhouse, where basically you can choose those powers within the Powerhouse, so you level up, so you choose your next ability set, you choose, you know, your new
talents,
your skill proficiency, whatever, your travel power, but you can test them out within that zone and then change any of your powers also within that zone. And then, you know, before you before you exit the door, it's finalized. So it's kind of the same thing, for example, games like Oblivion does. You know, in that first dungeon, you can change pretty much.
It's a try before you buy kind of system.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really useful. Like, you feel like there's not a lot of pressure and to spend as much time, and you can just try things out and feel comfortable. So that was a welcome change for me.
Yeah, that's something that we talked about with Bill Roper when we had him on here. Or I guess we just did an interview with him. Was that when I was playing it, I had chosen a travel power and decided it wasn't right for that character. And at the time they hadn't implemented the system yet, so there was no way for me to go back and undo that and choose another one. So I had to wipe the character and start again, which was kind of annoying. So I'm really glad they did something like that. And that's a problem with a lot of MMOs. Like, sometimes if you hadn't done like all of your homework on the powers, you have to go, like, you have to kind of make a choice when you level up. And sometimes you have kind of buyer's remorse. You know, you wish you had gone the other way after just a few seconds. So it's cool that they've got that system in place.
It certainly is. I didn't know this before. You get a second travel power at level 35.
Oh, really?
Which is near the cap, but I think that means you can ride two types of floating surfboards if you want, if you so choose, or you can both tunnel and fly, things like that. But yeah, half the fun for me has been just seeing the other heroes people make, you know, within the instances, within the world.
Oh, yeah, and by the way, on that topic, you should be expecting to receive a letter from Sega's lawyers any day now. That's something I wanted to talk about was how many copyright infringement characters have you seen so far?
Oh, gosh. Quite a few. I think maybe it's some more obscure ones. I saw a Furious George that was meant to be like Mr. Burns's monkey, but a superhero. Nice. I don't know if that's trademarked, but
no, I don't think that's actually in The Simpsons.
It's on the episode that I'll tell you later. But I can't remember seeing any Marvel characters or DC characters, but I definitely remember seeing, oh, there's like a, you know, Street Sharks, that cartoon.
Oh my God, yes.
I never saw it.
There's a Street Sharks guy that was very convincing, you know.
Oh, that's genius.
Torn jeans, no shirt. Shark head, and he said Jawsome to us when we talked. So
he's obviously on the role playing server.
Well, there are no actual role playing servers in Champions. It's kind of a different setup.
I was using my very shallow well of RPG MMO knowledge to pull from there.
No worries. Yeah,
I saw both Dr. Horrible and Captain Hammer from Dr. Horrible Sing Along blog.
Nice.
I saw a pretty good Optimus Prime. School Optimus Prime, not the one with flames on him. And actually, I made a pretty decent Invader Zim myself.
Oh, cool.
Got some good comments on that. I wonder, like, when City of Heroes came out, Marvel sued them, right? They sued Cryptic because they were complaining that you could make Marvel
Wolverine,
characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, which made us wonder, why didn't they sue Crayola for, you know, letting you draw Wolverine with crayons? But
why didn't they? Oh,
yeah, it's a very vexing question. But I wonder if there will be a similar lawsuit this time, especially now that they're a wholly owned and operated subsidiary of the Disney Corporation.
Gosh, you know, I really don't think so. I think it's almost because the tools are broader in the character creation. It almost, for me, I'm not a lawyer, obviously, it kind of shifts in Cryptic's favor that, like, well, there's such a huge amount of pieces and tools, like, what are we supposed to do, that a player used, you know, A12 and Z39 in combination to make Cyclops. Sorry.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, there is a lot of stuff in there that is kind of geared towards, you know, if you want to make a Wolverine-type character. I mean, they have an entire power set that's based on, like, fighting claws, like Wolverine style claws. So they do facilitate it, but that's really not enough. I wouldn't think I'm not exactly sure what happened with that original Marvel lawsuit. I know they worked it out because for a while before Champions went into development, Cryptic was supposed to be working on actively working on the Marvel Online MMO. So not only did they make up, they kissed and made up. But that ended up falling through, and they they didn't turn that project into Champions. They say they scrapped it completely and started working on Champions. So, but they, you know, stayed in the MMO, or superhero MMO business.
Yeah. I mean, I really hope nothing of that nature happens, because just from my experience last night and playing it previously, it's exciting to be in a context, right? That isn't Marvel, that isn't DC, that you're not totally familiar with. Mm. And there's such a mix of characters, and it doesn't look like messy. It doesn't look weird. There's not like this weird feeling of incongruency where there's like, you know, this crazy sorcerer with a top hat and, you know, a medieval knight or something, and a rock god. I don't know what I'm saying. Like an elf. Yeah, a golem. That guy. I got halfway through the
rock
word.
Guy.
God.
I thought you were just going to be happy to be roaming with the street sharks again.
That too. But it works. And the character creation tool is such an asset to the game. And generally half the time you will spend in it is, you know, looking at designing new characters. My friend Phil, again, has already designed like 9. He's had the game for 3 or 4 days. And it's a fundamentally strong part of the game.
Yeah, I think I'm up to 4 or 5 characters. Actually, I was playing with the character creator, and my wife was you know, looking at over my shoulder, and she's like, I want to try that. So she made a character. I just remember another one I saw, another nice retro one, which was a Battletoad.
Oh wow,
that was awesome.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm really tempted to make some Team Fortress 2 characters in there and see if I can find the right ability set. I think the heavy weapons guy might work.
Mm. Yeah, I think a good portion of that, of the joy of Champions Online so far, is seeing what everybody else has made. It's kind of Spore-ish that way. I mean, it's like that's like a lot of the idea behind Spore was like the exploration of going around and seeing what other people have made. And actually this for me is much more interesting than Spore was in that respect.
Yeah, I like that comparison.
Wait, did you guys mention if there's a limit to how many characters you can create?
There is. At least on my account, I think I have 9 slots.
Yeah, it's okay. 8 or 9, I think.
Like per server or just total?
No, there's no server.
It's like
typical
a global
server structure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The way it kind of works is each zone has its own kind of server, and there are multiple instances of that zone.
Yeah.
So I think they have a 100 person per instance limit. So when you move from one zone to another, you get to choose which instance of that zone you want to go to.
So you can be with your friends.
Yes.
Cool.
So it's not the typical server structure that we see in a lot of other games. Also in MMO news, Aeon is now in open beta, with open in quotation marks. Right now it's limited to Final Planet subscribers, but it'll probably open up further pretty soon. So keep an eye on that if you're more into the fantasy MMO genre. They're big on Wings.
Is that the free to play?
No, that's not free to play. That's NCSoft's one where the kind of the big gimmick or selling point on it is that you can get wings and fly around. Mm-hmm. So that's their big one that's supposed to launch in another month. Also, Section 8 comes out this Friday. Evan, are you excited about that at all? I haven't played around with the beta.
I'm definitely excited. The tribes player in me is excited for it. And to my understanding, there's a player cap up to 46 players permissions. So again, it's a multiplayer centric shooter. And the one cool mechanic that's interesting, when you respawn, you can pick any part of the map. So you have a top-down 2D view of the map, and you click where you want to respawn. You drop out of the sky, and you sort of hit like an air brake or boost up with your jetpack to slow down. And there's AA turrets within the environment that sort of restrict where you can land safely. But otherwise it's a very futuristic. Sort of has like the feel of a Frontlines game to some extent. You can deploy gadgets by air. You can drive tanks around. Though it isn't really like a Battlefield type game where vehicles are a strong part of the experience. Destroying generators and that sort of nature and just kind of an open battlefield. I haven't been able to play it with a massive game. When we had the press demo, it was around 20 players or so. And I was saying to Josh at the time that this might really feel like a great experience with sort of a more hectic experience and more people. So yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Does it feel like a successor to Tribes to you?
I don't think the developer intended it as one per se. It's not, you're not using your jetpack as much. I mean, you're definitely basically using it to reach new platforms. It doesn't have as much juice, so to speak, to let you float around. And the levels are pretty grounded. But just in the way that things are open, a lot of the weapons kind of resemble the, like the laser rifle from Tribes. There's definitely a sort of a brother to that in Section 8, and the mortar gun, for example, the turrets feel similar. So, yeah.
But there were some vehicle mechanics in Tribes 2. I don't know if I actually played Tribes 1, but in Tribes 2 there were a lot of vehicles you could buy and use. Does it work a similar way?
A little bit. They're more so you earn. I'm trying to remember. You basically earn a type of points as you play or as you complete objectives. Or as you hold slides for a certain amount of time, and you can spend those points on, you know, things like an ammo drop or a personal turret or a sort of a bipedal mech. You can drop down if you save up enough points, and you can walk that around for a little bit. So sort of like temporary special abilities more than vehicles that you're using tactically. Thanks.
All right. Well, that review will be upcoming in our December issue, the one we're working on right now. So we'll have more on that in the future. Also, something that came out a couple weeks ago that was kind of almost under the radar was the Pinnacle Station DLC for Mass Effect just came out. It's available at the EA download store for $5. But I just haven't been motivated to try it out at all. I mean, it seems like kind of such a small chunk of content that it's not worth going to the trouble of reinstalling Mass Effect, finding my save games if I still have them, and going through it. I mean, it's just like a small little thing. Like if I had just gotten Mass Effect, or if I had just finished playing through it, or, you know, if it were even still on my hard drive, I would consider it. But like this seems like too little too late for DLC. You know, it's like there's a shelf life for a game where the interest is going to be high for small pieces of DLC. Do you guys feel that way? Is there a time limit to after which you just don't want to go back and try out DLC?
There is, and I think something went fundamentally, I don't want to say awry, but like something shifted in BioWare's plans for that game for DLC. Because if you remember around launch, they're really saying, especially after the release of the first one, I can't remember the name of, it was like a $10 add-on.
Yeah, that was, I forget the name of it too.
But there's, yeah, you're going to see more of these types of missions. You're going to visit new worlds. You're going to get maybe a new party member potentially. And that did not happen at all. And
bring down the sky.
Bring down the sky. That's it. And for Pinnacle Station, we genuinely did not know about it until it released. Like, I had no idea this was coming. They did no press on it. Obviously, it's a really low cost thing. So they're just kind of throwing it out there. But I don't know if a lot of their team members just shifted over to Mass Effect 2 and they stopped working on DLC or.
Yeah, it seems incongruous with their DLC strategy for Dragon Age. It's like one of them seems to be really high on it, the other not so much. I wonder, I mean, like I would have thought that like if I really wanted to pump people up for Mass Effect 2, I would create like a big DLC pack for Mass Effect 1, like in the months leading up to the release of Mass Effect 2. So maybe even just like a month or two before it came out, just get people back into the Mass Effect mood with that, you know, and give them like a major reason to reinstall the first game and maybe play through it again.
And get people to use those characters again that they're going to transfer over in the second game, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that's a valuable thing and worth some amount of investment, but you know, at the same time, I have confidence those guys know what they're doing, obviously, but I'm not disappointed, but it's a shame that there wasn't more original DLC for Mass Effect.
Yeah, and I think we're probably going to have that problem less and less of a lack of DLC going forward. Because people really seem high on, or publishers at least seem really high on the idea of it. But another game that we're going to be reviewing in the December issue is Batman Arkham Asylum. Have you guys played the demo?
I haven't got around to it.
Oh,
it's a must-buy though. Like I'm gonna buy it as soon as it comes out. So that would just be a tickle tease for no reason.
you know, it's a Guinness Book of World Records holder, you know.
Oh no.
It's going to be
something obscure, isn't it?
No, it's actually something ridiculous.
Okay.
Apparently, like a few days ago, like right after it launched on the consoles, it was like Guinness Book of World Records awarded them the best critically received game or superhero game ever.
Oh gosh!
What?
Thanks, Guinness.
Yeah, way to really marginalize yourself, trivialize yourself.
Go make beer.
Yeah, it's like that. That really takes away from the person who fits the most golf balls in their mouth. I mean.
They feel slighted, you know.
Yeah, and it really does feel like they sold that. You know, that's but you know, let that take nothing away from the game itself, which you know, by all accounts is excellent. You know, the PC version in particular has a lot of like NVIDIA like went and worked with Rocksteady, the developer, and had guys come into their office and work with them on getting PhysX really integrated into the game. And they came by, was it last week that demo was? I forget. Yeah. Okay. It was last week. And showed us this demo of a few of the levels where they had really enhanced, the environment with PhysX stuff. They had things like volumetric fog. They had, in some hallucinations where the scarecrow had gassed you, like tiles, like falling off the wall as you walked by, and even like sections of geometry just like ripping away, like, you know, parts of a building ripping away and disintegrating into a bunch of, you know, thousands of different particles and swirling around. It was a really cool effect. And then they, you know, showed the same scene without it. And, you know, it still looks good, but it's a dramatic difference. Now it should be noted that in order to get the full benefit of, like, to see all of those effects, you have to have not only an NVIDIA, like, you know, GTX or GTX like 260 is what they recommend for the normal PhysX acceleration. But if you want to turn it up to high and see like all the goodies, you have to have like a GTX 260 plus a dedicated GeForce 8 Plus, you know, like just for physics acceleration. So I don't expect a lot of people are going to get the full benefits right away.
This is probably the first game that's ever said, hey, look, if you have the dedicated physics, because everybody, we've sort of joked about, hey, you can hang on to your old card and keep it around for PhysX. And this is like the
joking.
First time. Yeah. And this is the first time when it's actually serious.
Well, Darkest of Days, which I think also launches September 15th, does a similar thing where if you crank up PhysX to high, it will so bog down, like my GTX 285 was bogged down in certain places, mm-hmm. On high. So I ended up turning it down to, you know, normal, and it played fine and looked great. I do worry that this is going to, you know, have kind of a crisis effect with a lot of people,
yeah.
where they freak out because, you know, they have a kick-ass system and they turn it up to maximum and it chugs, even though it's like, you know, it looks like it's built for the future. You know, you come back and play it later and it will look better. I personally don't see that as a bad thing. I see that as added value. I think, you know, it's not something I think they should be spending a lot of time on because, I would rather have, you know, the full benefit of the game when I buy it. But I mean, in this case, it wasn't Rocksteady spending a lot of
too long.
Yeah, well, it wasn't. Yeah, I don't think it was because of PhysX that the game is coming out a couple of weeks later on the PC, but and it wasn't Rocksteady that was doing it. It was NVIDIA coming in and doing it for them. So, it's not like an outrageous thing for me. I just worry that some people are going to have that perception that then they get upset at the game because they can't turn it up to maximum.
Yeah, but, it's like it's Evan's what does he call it? The forum post generation.
Oh, forum post rhetoric.
Forum post rhetoric. It's going to get the best of it.
Yeah, I mean, there are always people like that. I mean, forums in general, they just kind of annoy me. Especially like when a game first launches and like anybody has problems with it. Like if there's a small segment of the population of people that have bought this game that have a problem with it, they go onto the forums and they say, you know, how dare you release this unfinished buggy game? Even if it's like say 1% of people that buy a game have this problem, they go on there and go into a rage about how it's unfinished and buggy, and you know, some people will point out, hey, you know, it's working fine for me, it's working fine for the vast majority of people, and they will they will say, well, it's obviously, you know, broken for everybody, because, or almost everybody, because look at all these other people posting on this forum with the same problem. It's like, well, the people that for whom it is working are not on the forum. They're playing the game. You know, it's just a weird psychology to it.
Yeah. Dan, I'm looking forward to reading your review and seeing if the PC version happens to be the definitive one, and that I don't have to rely on forum posters to tell me that Cape physics are lame.
I highly recommend that you check out the demo. The demo does have physics acceleration in it.
Ooh.
So you can get a taste of that, of what your system can handle. So if you have an NVIDIA card, GeForce 8 Plus, that will work for you.
Oh, will a 295 do it, Dan? Will that work?
I think that will work, yes.
Okay, that's my guess.
Andy, what video card are you running these days?
8800 GT.
That'll do it. I'm pretty sure. Anyway, it shouldn't have any problem running that at normal.
Sweet, even, yeah, right on.
So I highly recommend trying out that demo. As for physics, I mean, does that make a game like more valuable to you guys? I mean, like if you see a game has physics acceleration, is that a really good selling point for you?
I don't think the prospect of physics acceleration really is a selling point for me. I'm not going to see that in the box and be like, oh damn, got to have it. But physics in general, you know, great ragdoll, and those types of effects really tend to draw me in. It means a lot to me.
Yeah, I love physics in games. The thing is, I just like the games that, or right now the games that are using it, because not everybody has a GeForce 8 Plus, they can't rely on it. They can't depend on you having that.
Yeah.
When they make the game, so they can't design levels around physics-based stuff. So it's all basically window dressing right now, and it looks cool. The Batman stuff with physics turned on looks amazing. First of all, I don't think that it's yet worth buying a second GeForce card for that you're just going to use for physics acceleration, because I mean, relatively few games make use of it. Not a whole lot of games have you know, that much physics acceleration. Batman is kind of on the cutting edge of that. And yeah, it's just not that big a thing yet. I hope it takes off, and I hope that that people start designing games that really make use of physics, because I love blowing stuff up. I really do love it. And I like it when they break into a lot of pieces. I guess one other little bit of news, GOG.com has a 2-for-1 Interplay game sale going on right now through September 8th. It's a celebration sale for their 1-year anniversary. Good for them. We like those guys a lot. But if you haven't played like Fallout 1 and Fallout 2, or like Sacrifice, or what else they got on there, Evan?
Descent. Hello. Yes. Earthworm Jim 1 and 2.
Whoa,
counts as
nice.
One.
Jagged Alliance 2.
Right.
Fantastic game. I like that one a lot. MDK. Shattered Steel. Shogo from our friends at Monolith. And yeah.
Yeah, so 2-for-1, so you get 2 games for $6. That's pretty hard to turn down if you've missed out on especially Fallout 1 and 2. I mean, come on. Those are awesome. So yeah, jump on that. It's a great opportunity.
Please do.
So now we have our special guest for the podcast is Stardock CEO Brad Wardell, who bravely took us on yesterday in a lively round of Demigod. It was myself, Evan, and Norm Chan from MaxPC against Team Stardock, headed up by Brad. And Brad, thanks for joining us. Brad, you were talking some serious smack before the game, I believe.
Indeed. And I said, well, I'm sure you guys are fine game players, you know, for journalists, but, you know, for, you know, we at Stardock, we're actual gamers. We make games. We play games. We don't just write about them from the sidelines. I got to eat my words pretty badly yesterday.
Well, you know, that is, you know, it's not an unfair assumption to make about most journalists, and in most games it's true even with us that you know, we don't have time to really put a lot of effort into getting good at every game. So, you know, a developer would rightfully assume that, you know, a game journalist has a lot of other things on their plate. They've got to play a bunch of games. They're probably not going to be that good at any one particular game, but Demigod in particular has kind of captured our attention here. So we've put some time into it.
What was particularly painful for me is that we're playing on Cataract, and that's one of the maps where I don't know. I mean, the design of that map, the flags and their placement and the percentages was done by me. Me and Mike Marr designed out the whole Citadel upgrade and flag game mechanic in Demigod was something that Mike Marr and I worked on together. And so, like, for example, the experience flag in the middle is purposely there as a red herring. It's basically worthless. It's there as bait to get people to waste their time on it.
Right.
Because it does, but it didn't work out quite how we thought in that particular game.
Well, you did a hell of a job with designing that map because it's by far the most popular one. It's like what most people seem to play online.
That credit belongs to Mike Marr. He's the one who actually designed the map. My contribution was the flags and the Citadel upgrades.
Well, the flags are an important part of that. And you know, we don't find the middle flag to be worthless on our side. The middle flag, that one is, gives the team that controls it a 20% experience boost, which lets them level up faster.
Just barely, though.
Yeah. But it does have the side effect, because there are no minions walking by there from the enemy portal. That means if you're sitting there trying to defend it, you're not leveling up at all, because you're not killing minions and getting experience points.
Exactly. Originally, when it was put in there, the idea was to get people to go to that flag and think that flag was more important. People who weren't doing the statistical, you know, the math on it, and realize that if you're not getting those minions, that's the flag that is supposed to really matter on that map is actually the life one, the health one on the if you're on the light side on the right.
Definitely.
If you control that one, that 15% health really matters a lot. But the problem with you guys, and that's I mentioned on a Demigod journal thing, is that you guys have a tactical, you guys play the map. Not only do you know the map strategically, but you also play as a team tactically far better than anyone we've played. It was just amazing how flexible your strategies were on the fly.
Yeah, we're constantly chattering over Skype. I mean, we watched the video that you posted, and we'll have the link to that in our comments section. But we watched the video, and you guys, you know, you were talking a little bit, but you weren't chattering like we do. I mean, we're constantly, you know, asking each other for updates on what's going on. Where do you need us? You know, do you need me to teleport over to you? You know, all kinds of stuff like that. Just anything, like, there's constant information flow. Really, there's never really any silence on our Skype.
We are in hive minds, in other words.
Well, clearly, there was a time in the last game where you guys were actually in our base at our portal, and we were concentrating to kill you guys. And there would be a number of times where we thought we had you, and like, oh, Oak just shielded Erebus. And then, you know, and so Oak's going to survive. And then Erebus stuns us. And pretty soon, and then an unclean beast ends up killing one of our guys in our own base area. I'm like, how did this happen? We went in to kill them. This shouldn't be happening.
Evan really is Johnny on the spot with that invulnerability.
But, now, how did we do compared to gas-powered games?
You did a little bit better than they did.
I'd say at least moderately better. I mean, you guys were more aggressive, and I like that you guys adjusted your strategy for the second match too, which seemed to produce some results. You were definitely leveling a lot faster the second match.
Yeah. Well, the on the second match, what we changed is that I play as Erebus, and which I did the first game, but I went off and tried to control the two flags on the outer side, which allowed me to level up more. Our strategy was based, and this is where we failed, is that to play conservatively and not get killed. And then over time, because your team was spent a lot of money on flag locks and teleport scrolls, that if as long as we didn't get killed, we could slowly out-equipment you. But unfortunately, because you guys worked so well as a team, we would think we'd have you, we'd go after you, but it would be more like a trap. You guys would teleport in, one in front and one behind, and then kill the person in question, you know, Akio or Leo. And that's, you know, once you're doing that, once we're starting to get killed, our strategy fell apart.
Yeah, and that's actually where we end up getting in trouble on when we play against some really well coordinated teams online. So, some of these guys just wipe the floor with us, which is kind of embarrassing. But like we get into trouble because we do spend a lot of money on flag locks because we value war score maybe even too highly, and we get into trouble that way because people spend money on equipment and we can't stand toe to toe against them. So and then we just get pushed off of the flags and can't control that either.
Yeah, as long as if we could have just kept ourselves from being killed, but once we were getting killed, we were feeding you enough gold to overcome that. And with your flag locks, that meant you could always teleport to help your teammates.
Yeah. Right.
And not dying is key to our strategy as well.
Right.
That's the cornerstone of any strategy, really, is you can't really do much if you're dead. It's a good strategy for life in general, actually.
Yeah, one of the things when I talked to GPG about updating the AI is like get them to quit getting themselves killed. You know, be more and more, you know, less aggressive on the AI. Most people who end up with an AI teammate say just as long as he's protecting my towers and stuff, I'm a happy guy. Don't have him charge in and try to do pushes and such.
Yeah.
And that's one thing they did change in the 1.1 update, wasn't it? Or was that 1.2? I forgot where you can scale how much reward the AI gives you if you kill it.
That's in 1.2. That's not available to the public yet. But we're internally beta testing that, and 1.2 has a bunch of other stuff too, like the pathfinding has been rewritten basically for 1.2, and lots of other goodies.
Oh, excellent! The pathfinding has been a little bit of a hassle, especially with generals, because the minions just kind of get stuck on corners.
Oh, I know. You know the funny thing is about the pathfinding in Demigod. It's written in Lua.
Hmm.
It's not in the actual engine, which was really surprising that it would actually be done. Because it seems like it'd be a lot harder to do. In the beta, it was A-Star, and then it got switched over to a different type of algorithm, but it's all done in Lua.
Do you know if Gas Powered is using the pathfinding tech from SubCom 2 in there?
I have a feeling that 1.2 is borrowing Lua code from SubCom 2, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, because when I went and saw SubCom 2 for the announcement, they had some really impressive pathfinding tech based on like particle flow simulations that really seems like a huge leap forward. And I hope they make that work and hopefully the benefits will trickle down to Demigod.
Yeah, I know in Demigod, that was one of the things that they were working on for it. Is the data, and they had different names for it at different times as it evolved. And I have a feeling that you're going to see a lot of that trickle down because it is, at the end of the day, largely the same. We game developers, we make engines and then we make a game on top of our engines.
Right. So getting back to yesterday's game, I noticed that you said in some of your forum posts that you're typically an Oak player.
Yeah, I'd only played Oak in my games other than when we decided to do this. And then I had to learn a different character because one of our other guys, he said he had to play Oak, and I was willing to put in the time to learn someone else. And in hindsight, I was my first inclination was to play Sedna, because mm-hmm. she's a healer, and it's a much more straightforward way to help your team. But I just couldn't. It was just not fun for me to be. Oh, look, I'm healing people. I'm more of a rather kill stuff kind of guy.
Well, Sedna's pounce is pretty vicious.
It is, but against you can't. It's harder for her to do mass minion kills, and I really like killing minions.
True. But do you think the outcome of yesterday's game would have been any different if you had been in your comfortable class?
No. The teamwork you guys had was simply beyond anything we had seen before. I had never seen. I mean, I saw things in there like, wow, I could see pros. You know, if there was a professional gaming league still doing this, like, okay, there was a time on from our right side, your left side, where we thought we had your unclean beast dead, and and I think that was Evan, right?
The unclean beast was Norm. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So Norm's running over on the right. We think he is dead. So two of our guys is going after him, but then you and Evan. You know, pop in there, one in front, one behind. We get stunned. It's the unclean beast gets shielded, first of all, and then they turn around and kill both our guys. And yep. That execution was just so unbelievable that, because our strategy was basically very monolithic. Here's what we're going to do and expect this will be enough. There is no flexibility to our strategy. Mm-hmm.
So what about or what type of oak build do you typically use? Evan's a big oak player.
Now I know that a lot of people like playing with the penitents big time, but I love building up tons of spirits. Is my general preference. And then when I'm playing on a team game, I like shielding myself or my other guys. Before we fixed it in the builds, I would combine my oak with one of the there was an artifact that basically allowed you to get your hit points back in over a couple of seconds, and I can't remember the one offhand.
But
I
would shield myself.
Yeah, the Heart of Life. I think it's Heart of Life. And if I started getting weak, I could shield myself where I can't get any damage, and then I'd get my hit points back and just continue on and rinse and repeat. But it was pretty cheesy, so we fixed it, unfortunately. Yeah,
that was a big bonus for Erebus players too, because you could go into mist and use it, and you couldn't be touched.
Yeah, I wasn't as I never even thought about that because I played Erebus, but yeah.
But so what about the new guys, Oculus and the Demon Assassin? Those guys are being added soonish to the game. No concrete date for that yet.
We're still working on them. The Demon Assassin, I'm a little worried about because he's going to require, and we're going to do something that's going to probably irritate some players. So here, but what we're going to do is, he gets added to your account. It's almost like it's almost like a DLC content, except they're free. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that we'll start handing him out piecemeal to people, so we can kind of beta him, so to speak, without having to have a special beta build. Because we're a little worried that one of his powers is that he can basically teleport other people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we could see that getting pretty darn annoying, right? You think you're doing well, you get teleported into something terrible.
Right.
So there's going to be quite a bit of play testing on that. So even when he first comes out, which it should be in early August, GPG's just, you know how GPG is. They want it's all about the polish. Stardock, that's one area where Stardock is like, just put it out there. It looks good enough. But, they love the super high quality modeling in that. And so they're putting the touches on that. Hopefully in early September, hopefully soon after we get back from PAX, we'll be able to start, putting him through their paces. Oculus, I'm not as familiar with. I know he's a general, and his strength really comes from essentially consuming is being a general. He's the general's general, so to speak. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays out.
So you guys aren't playing with him internally yet?
No, we haven't got to play with them internally. We've only got to see the kind of the models and stuff, but they're still finishing up on the Lewis scripting.
Mm. Yeah, they're definitely going to be a very interesting addition to the game, especially that assassin swap move. It sounds just nasty for catching people who are trying to escape.
Exactly. Yeah, indeed. And he was kind of made as a counter to because Regulus is on the light side, and this guy's kind of on the dark side. And the idea is that because people get ticked off that Regulus is, kind of he's a sniper, and there's not a lot of players who are really anti-sniper, and this Demon Assassin's kind of the anti-Regulus.
Right. I can imagine him causing a lot of problems for Regulus players.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. We're really excited to get, right now, the one we're, internally, we're QAing version 1.2, and we're really anxious to get version 1.2 out, because once we do that, we can really start to get up tournaments and stuff. There's a couple of exploits that we're trying to, we've solved internally, where people are doing crappy things to disconnect them. I tell you, the people messing with the stats on these multiplayer centric games, there's just a constant battle.
Yeah.
For people who are just obsessed with those stats. And version 1.2 addresses a lot of that.
They're just doing everything they can think of to break it.
Yeah, exactly. Anything to get that win in their column. And so we're going to actually be in a weird position of having to ban accounts and stuff after 1.2 because of people who are just, maliciously trying to stack up their win count.
Right. Do you know if there are any plans to do anything about the apparent imbalance of having like multiple demigods of the same type on one team? I know like you guys, like before we switched to our normal classes. Like when you first join the game, it assigns you to a random one. But you guys said, you know, okay, you can't have two Erebuses on one team. So, but
that would have been something. Well, what we wanted to do is, what GPG and us have been wanting to do is, once we have 10 total demigods, there's 10 slots, then we can have an option to say unique demigods required per team.
Right. But do you think it's a major imbalance or balance problem if you have like a team of three Erebuses?
I'm not sure, except it just seems to make it less fun.
That's true.
Because the example we always used in the beta was, what happens if you had five Reguluses on a team? And it turns out they don't really do as well as you might think, because they can never seem to level up fast enough to get those super snipe themselves versus a mixed team does. But still, it's just less fun.
Yeah.
When I play online, I almost never see teams where they double up on a demigod.
Right. And it is always best to use powers in combination rather than stack the powers. Although I guess there was like one team we went up against that had like two oaks both using penitence, and that got pretty vicious, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean there's some situations where double rook, if you're depending on the third class or the fourth demigod they're using there, can be good. You have total tower synergy.
Right.
Oh yeah, I tell you, we played a few people when we were practicing with who had a rook, and if they're really good with the towers, I mean they basically slowly just move you in. And that is really nasty.
Yeah. We're honestly kind of relieved to see you guys weren't running a rook, especially on that health flag. That's usually a big obstacle for us to overcome.
Oh, yeah, especially early. And I probably should have played as rook, because be next to the oak, I can play as rook. But everyone kept telling me, no, don't play as rook. He's too weak.
All right. Well, we don't want to over demigod our audience this week. But Brad, thank you very much for joining us. And demigod is on sale right now on Impulse, isn't it?
I believe so. It's this week where the Impulse has the Labor Day sale, so there's like almost tons of games have like half off. It's insane.
Yeah, Demigod is $20 on Impulse right now. So now is a really good time to jump in. All right, Brad. Well, thanks a lot for joining us.
All right, thanks for having me. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too.
Likewise. We should play again when the new content comes out.
Yeah, we'll have to have a rematch.
We must be avenged. Yes.
We'll have a rematch when 1.2 comes out, and we can post the replays.
All right. So, yeah, that's true. That people would like to see that, because a lot of people would say, "Well, you guys totally got crushed." And it wasn't. We definitely got our butts kicked, but it wasn't a total. You know, we didn't totally get creamed. It was more of a mild to mid level beating.
Yeah.
So all right. Well, I'll talk to you guys soon. Are you guys going to be at PAX?
I'll be there.
Dan, you going to be there?
I will not be there, unfortunately.
Oh, you bum. I can't believe it. It's so fun. You were there last year, weren't you?
No, I've actually never been to a PAX.
Oh, my God. It is so fun. It is so fun, especially after the show. But that's another story.
Yeah, go ahead and rub that in, Brad.
That's all I've got, right? I just got my butt kicked at demigod. Yeah. This is all I've got left.
It's like, oh, I'm so sorry you're not going to PAX. That must suck for you.
Yes. How bad for you. All right, I'll talk to you guys later.
Yep, take care. Thanks, Brad. Bye. All right, Dan, so before we move on to questions, this is breaking news, I guess, but it's kind of a breaking blog post on the TeamFortress2.com, just TeamFortress.com website. So as you may remember from the last classless update, they rolled out a new hat system where players could accrue hats as random drops, sort of like an MMO. And what you may not know, though, actually, Dan and Andy, was that there's a group of players that sort of use this exploit, like a server exploit.
Like the idle servers?
Indeed, yeah. They're called idle servers. They're basically like 100 slot servers, I think, that certain people had put up. And you could sit in them without playing the game and eventually accrue new items, potentially. You'd get these random drops because they're based on your time played. So of course, Valve, who's very interested in justice, which I think is absolutely fantastic, is going to wipe all these items out of players that use idling servers. They found a way to track them, apparently. And actually, because they're very good with metrics, and I would expect them to be able to do that, they're going to wipe all those items clean. And players who did not use them, which they estimate to be 95% of the player base, are going to have a new hat in their inventory. So, justice served.
Yeah, I always love to see spammers get spanked. Or not spammers, but you know, in-game spammer, you know, exploiters. So that's great news. And in other news, very interesting news, I just now found out that Tim Edwards of PC Gamer UK, who's their editor in chief now, he and I were born on the exact same day.
Whoa.
Yeah.
The stars aligned to produce two wonderful editors on that day. Well, in separate years, I think, but
No, same year.
What?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Exact same day. And same birthday, that's no biggie, but exact same day.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's, I guess the stars were aligned for nerds that day.
They were. You should, check the celebrity calendar.
There's actually like nobody of note on my birthday.
Yeah, me too. I have like John Cusack or something.
Hey, John Cusack's awesome. Or at least he used to be. He was in Gross Point Blank. No one can take that away from him.
We should move on to questions before this degenerates into a bad argument.
That's a good idea.
This is Dan from the Quad Cities, Illinois. And I just got done listening to your last PC podcast. I've been listening to you guys like crazy the past year when I realized that you guys had a PC podcast. I was just listening to you talking about the lifetime subscriptions that some MMOs have been doing. And I actually got a lifetime subscription to the Lord of the Rings MMO and have really been enjoying the fact that I don't have to pay it monthly. I feel like sometimes when you pay monthly, and I did the WoW thing for a while, that you tend to feel like you have to play, because if you don't play, you're wasting your money. And I feel like after I did the lifetime subscription, I did play a lot, and I still do play a lot of that game, but I feel like that the pressure's off. And I feel like, I don't know, sometimes it feels like you need to play because you're like wasting money. You got to play. If you don't play, then why are you even paying the monthly fee? So I'm just curious what your thoughts were on that and whether anyone else feels that way. Thanks. Bye.
Maybe that's the key to getting me into playing an MMO.
I think that is an excellent way of looking at it. Yeah. I mean, I did used to have that pressure because I am kind of a cheap bastard. So if I spent money, it's like I'm going to get every cent of value out of this, so I'm gonna play the hell out of it. If I didn't play it, I would feel bad about it. Although arguably, if you pay $200 for a lifetime subscription and then you don't play it, you've wasted even more money. So
it's like having a subscription to Edge and never reading it. I mean, who does that?
Thanks.
Whoops, I do that.
No, I definitely advocate that kind of thinking, though, that the way you interface with the product, purchasing, where you buy it, customer service, you know, affects the playing experience as a whole. You don't play in a vacuum. You know?
I like the concept of the lifetime subscription. I don't know. And like, if for me personally, I don't think I would be that invested in any game to want to play that long. Well, I mean, maybe, but so, yeah.
I mean, what have you played more than anything in the past 2 years?
Past 2 years. In the past 2 years, I've been kind of all over the place.
Yeah, past 2 years have been actually like kind of a, you know, it's the time in my life when things have been shifting toward like not having as much free time and stuff, you know?
Okay.
And I did play a bunch of Fallout. I played, you know, at least 100 and some hours of that.
Yeah. Fallout 3 was big for me too.
Yeah.
Before that, it was Oblivion for me.
Yeah. We've played a bunch of Demigod.
Yeah.
I mean, and just I put a bunch of Left 4 Dead too.
Just for myself, I put 250 or something hours in the Team Fortress in the last year, and yeah, I would have put down $200 for that game just for the value I've gotten out of it, for the experiences I've gotten out of it. I put close to that amount of money on an Arma 2 server. It's basically my lifetime, well, not lifetime subscription, but yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, if you are planning to play a game that much, then yeah, I don't see why not.
I'm having a thought here. It's coming to me slowly.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine.
Push.
Induce
the thought. Induce the thought.
I don't know. We'll have to cut it out. This already has like a thing for consoles. Gamefly. you pay a, you know, if they had a yearly subscription service like that for Steam, where you get like a certain amount of games at a time or something, that would be rad.
Well, and there's Game Tap, which
there
is
was Game Tap.
It's still
around.
Yeah,
yeah. No, there's something to think about, huh? Like if you paid $200 a year and you could play like two games a month or something, that would be awesome.
Yeah,
yeah. It would be cool if Steam were to do, or if Impulse or whoever were to do a setup. I think Steam would probably be best equipped to do it, where if you have a subscription for X dollars a month, like you get like a game of the month club kind of thing, like wine of the month,
dude.
Cheese of the month, you know. That would be cool.
That would be way cool. And it's because, you know, it's not like I don't like MMOs, but I really like playing as many single player games as I can. I love single player games. So
yeah, I mean, would you pay $20 a month to get a mystery game at the end of the month?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it'd be a cool way to be exposed to new things. It's also a good way to be exposed to crappy things.
Yeah. What I think we're all saying is like there's a really untapped market for people telling other people what they should play almost.
or at least a subscription model that doesn't have to do with an MMO, you know, like a subscription model that has to do with cool single player games too.
But yeah, Evan, people telling other people what they should play, isn't that what we do?
Well, right, editorial, but
we've tapped that market.
That's your job.
in terms of retailer, just saying, play this; it is good.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast. This is Andrew from Salt Lake City, home of none other than Andy Bauman. Hey, what's up? I just had a quick question. I'm hunting for a copy of American McGee's Alice, and I am not finding any for a fair price, like less than $20, say. There are some going on Amazon for upwards of over 100. I'm just wondering, do you know of any places I can hunt for one? eBay didn't have any really good prices at the time. Anyway, if you've got any good places to look, I'm very interested in the game. I kind of missed the boat on that one. Thanks. Bye.
My buddy Clinton has it, and he's in Salt Lake. I mean, he has a box copy of it.
By the way, Andy, the call is coming from inside the house.
His name's Andrew, too. It's so crazy.
Are you calling in and leaving questions now, Andy?
No, I haven't done that since like a year ago.
But yeah, it is tough to get out of print games that aren't on like GOG or Steam. eBay really is the best source for that. I don't know exactly when he sent that question in, but I searched for it on eBay, and there are I think 4 copies on there right now for under $10. So it's, you know, it's gonna change day to day, obviously, but there's a trick you can do that Logan just told me about. Where if you do a search, you can save your search, and then it will email you when new stuff comes in, when new stuff is posted. So if you're looking for a certain item like American McGee's Alice, you can search for that, say, email me when more of these are posted, and you can stay on top of it, and you'll find one sooner or later.
Oh, the audio CD is only $14.99 at Best Buy.
Fantastic. There's a Mac version here on eBay for $5.50. But the other thing that you know gives us some hope that maybe Alice may soon come to Steam or something like that is that a few months back EA and Spicy Horse announced the return of American McGee's Alice. So they're going to put out a new title in the Alice franchise.
Oh, really?
So it's unclear as to exactly when that will happen, but it is in development. It was a few months ago. Who knows what's happened since. Haven't heard anything about it since, but, hopefully, you know, when that gears up to come out, they'll re-release the original, for download. Hopefully.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah. It'd be great. I mean, that was a classic game. All right, so that's all the time we've got for questions today. We should do playlists real damn quick. Andy, what are you up to?
I've been playing Wolfenstein.
Nice.
What do you
nice.
Think?
I wanted to do the fanboy thing and like IM you, Evan, and be like, I hope you're not giving Wolfenstein a low score because I think it's awesome. Because I knew you were like working on the review, but I refrained. And I want to know what you think, actually, because I think it's absolutely awesome.
Evan?
I mean, it has whatever, but it's cool. It's came out of, it had low expectations for me, and it's blowing me away so far.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I think I would reflect those impressions, as I did in our review that's sort of slowly hitting subscribers now, I believe. But
okay, cool.
It's I think you can definitely see a lot of Soldier of Fortune in there from Raven's part, and there's a lot of
that's very appealing. Certainly,
I mean, one of the most like compact ways I can describe it is the enemies want to entertain you. I mean, they're so eager to
get shot in the face,
to get shot in the face, to get vaporized, to get lit on fire, and I mean, there's a weapons upgrade system in the game, sort of similar to BioShock.
I've heard it's like strikingly similar to Metal Gear Solid 4, but I don't know for sure because I've never played.
I don't know where anyone would get that idea.
I don't know. But, that's what Havoc says.
Oh, Havoc. So if you upgrade your sniper rifle all the way, it'll basically take off any limb you shoot it at. And if you shoot somebody's calf off, they'll sort of stand there, hop on one leg slightly, and look down agape and just fall over. And, you know, shooting enemies that are sprinting between cover, they'll tumble over and carry that momentum. Just excellent animations and great gore and a gun that turns men into skeletons, ultimately. So, hey.
Yeah, it's so fun. And I have to say, I was upgrading the sniper rifle, and I got the silencer. I shot it once. I immediately sold the silencer back because the report of the KR-98 is so satisfying that you cannot put a silencer on that thing and still have the same experience.
It sounds like it's a really good silencer, though, actually.
Oh, really?
Especially if you put the bayonet on that, it looks like a pointy silencer. It's got this really sharp, like, pew pew kind of noise.
I don't know, dude. The report of the gun is just so awesome. It, like, makes the game that much better, I think.
So, how far are you into it?
I don't know, like, percentage wise, but I've done.
It's 5 hours.
Oh, yeah. Way more than that.
Okay.
I've done a lot of missions, so.
Okay, good. I was reading someone else's review, and they had complained about Eisenstadt, which is basically like a light hub town.
Yeah.
So within Eisenstadt, you can roam it freely. You can go to certain objectives and talk to, you know, members of the resistance to get new weapons and new missions. And I thought this was one of the most surprising things about the game that they didn't talk about. They didn't put in their marketing at all. Like, this is sort of a pseudo open world. Like, you're having random battles and that scale with the game as you progress further. What kind of impression did that have on you, Andy, when you had that? I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, that came out of nowhere, right? Like, all of a sudden they're telling me that I can roam around and go to the obviously marked buildings that the Nazis don't see.
Did you see the penny arcade strip?
Oh, no, but I was like, this is ripe for the taking.
It really is. They had like Blazkowicz talking to a couple guys, like, you know, I don't know how you guys do it here, but, you know, back where I was, you might want to try this. On our secret buildings, we didn't have giant signs.
Yeah. it's pretty so ridiculous. True.
But I mean, whatever, that's fine. I was surprised, and I was like, whoa, this could be an interesting mechanic if I can, like, choose missions and certainly, like, choose who to upgrade from. Because they sort of hinted, and I don't know if this pays off, but they hinted at, like, the black market guys, you know, might turn on you at any second or something like that. So,
yeah, they sort of give that impression at the outset, but...
I don't know. No spoilers.
No, I won't.
Okay.
What else was I going to say? Oh, gosh.
Gun that turns people into skeletons.
Gun that...
I'm going to keep repeating that phrase over and over and over again.
I think it was the original Fear that had a similar gun that turned people into skeletons.
Yeah, the particle sniper rifle, purple sort of.
I enjoyed that.
That was lovely.
I'm looking forward to playing Wolfenstein. It's actually been kind of a polarizing game in a lot of ways. I've heard some people just don't like it at all, and other people are loving it. Everybody here who's played it has loved it. I mean, Andy, you love it. Evan loves it. Logan loves it. So I'm looking forward to giving it a shot when I get some time.
I mean, it's summer film. You know, it's an action movie experience. You're kind of the Stallone or the Bruce Willis charging into muzzle flashes and, you know, not dying at all. And
you're actually the Blazkowicz.
The Blazkowicz, of course. It's a really empowering game, and it's pretty simple on the surface. But again, like, that light amount of openness goes a long way when you're not just simply moving from sort of bookended checkpoint to checkpoint, right, Andy?
Yeah, definitely.
So, Evan, what else have you been playing?
Oh, gosh. Champions Online, which has been delightful.
What kind of character did you create?
So I'm straight up archery right now, which is fun. I really didn't want to do anything close combat because I feel like I waste too much energy, like mental energy, focused on like my positioning. Like, okay, I need to be facing this guy and in this range, and I just want to hit one button and have my arrow do its work. So that's been cool.
Does your character's name have blank arrow?
No, okay. No. Gosh, there's so many uncreative names. I saw a mecha guy yesterday with jet boots that was called Alpha X and all these things. But the other character I'm working on right now that I just created actually before the podcast is Dr. Lobster, and he's going to be, I don't know, I'm not sure about his power set, but he looks like a mad scientist lobster guy.
He's got to be melee, doesn't he? I mean, he's got huge claws.
Yeah, I really wish there's like a water-based somehow ability set. But so I've been playing Champions, and I've been other than that, I've been playing this game called Cannabalt, Cannabalt, from the guys at atomatomic.com. It's a Flash game. It's free. Those guys do some terrific Flash games, sort of in the 8-bit style of visuals.
Wait, is this the one that you're running?
Yeah.
Oh, I played it the other day.
Yeah, the game moves from left to right. You're basically this guy. At the beginning, the first 2 seconds, you jump out of an office building, and the glass breaks, and there's random elements. Like, you're basically running from rooftop to rooftop, and doves will come up as you jump on the rooftop, and satellites will fall down, or you'll hit random walls. So it's a one button game. You're just jumping. You're not doing anything else. So. Just kind of a cool exercise in momentum.
So yeah, I've also been playing some Champions. I've created a couple of characters. I created the 7-foot baby, who's really kind of disturbing.
Yes. What the hell is his power set? Might.
Yeah, he's Might. Okay. He just beats on people. Although I saw somebody else who had made a giant baby. It was totally ripped me off. But he had like double pistols, which was kind of funny. It's like his giant baby with two John Wooing it up. And I also remade my Champions Online character, the Arm of the Law, who's a guy with one robotic arm and a sword and kind of a cowboy hat, basically. And so I've worked up all of my characters to like level 7. So I went to like the first zone. Evan, did you go to desert or Canada?
I went to Canada.
Yeah. Ice zombies. Well, yeah. No, I sent a couple to each.
Cool.
That's kind of a bummer in that you can't go to both of those zones. You can only go to one or the other, and then like you get into the higher level zones. But
So there's guns though. See.
Yeah, you can get guns.
There's munitions. You can choose a double blade based character or a single bladed based character,
or claws or fists. There are a bunch of different variations. I've also been playing some Osmos, which is ridiculously addictive.
It is. And relaxing.
Yeah, yeah. That's another one my wife is playing a lot. What else have I been playing? There was at least one other thing.
Logan wants us to know that he's playing GeForce.
The hamster game.
And actually, still? Dan is too, I guess.
Well, I'm actually not playing that. I refute that claim. There was something else I was going to talk about that I played lately, but what was it? That's right. Gratuitous Space Battles. There's a beta available for pre-order customers. It's an indie game where basically all the gameplay is in creating your ships and setting them up on a 2D map. And then you just push go. And they attack the opposing fleet. So it's all about setting up the weapon layout of your ships, the armor and shields and engines, and then giving them orders. You don't order them to attack specific targets, but you prioritize fighters, cruisers, or frigates. You can set behavior like protection or escorting or vulture where they attack ships that are already damaged. So you set kind of behaviors for them, and then you just let them go, let them rip, and watch the carnage. It's pretty cool. And if you're a fan of, you know, like big space battles in movies, like, you know, the big fleet battles in Star Wars or in like Star Trek Deep Space Nine, it's fun if you just want to watch that, you know, and not have to worry about managing stuff in real time.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun, actually. I'm going to have to give that a shot. I miss those kind of games where you're sort of just the clock worker. Or the, what's the phrase? You know what I'm saying? You sort of just, you know, you turn the lever, you put things in play, and then you just, you know, push it forward and let it happen.
Yeah, I'll get you a beta invite, and we can send our fleets against each other. It's multiplayer in that you can like upload your fleet, and anybody can download it and play against it. Oh, speaking of Star Trek, we just got a letter in to our letters at PCGamer.com, talking about our Star Trek Online cover story. And this is from Joe G. He says, first, nice article about the upcoming Star Trek MMO. I might actually play an MMO because of it. However, I take great umbrage over some of your assumptions about the fan base and which Star Trek shows were actually the best. First, I grew up with Star Trek itself, not the Next Generation, which was a poor imitation. Much Ooh. Like Star Wars Episode 4, also known as The Star Wars, the first Ooh. Is the greatest. I also know this makes me an apostate in the realm of Star Trek orthodoxy, and I'll add an additional heresy by stating that Enterprise was the show that brought my faith in Star Trek back to the fore. That was a great show. How anyone could not be interested in the genesis of the history of the entire Star Trek story is beyond me. It just reminds me of an old saying, amateurs study tactics, professors study logistics. Just my two cents, which will be dismissed more than likely in an offhand way by the vast majority of fans. Thanks for the heads up about the game. Looking forward to your review and playing. P.S. Don't you dare disparage the Klingon D7.
Wow. I just started bleeding randomly. So mad. No.
I thought I was the one that hates Enterprise with a passion.
Well, anybody who... Oh, gosh. Who anybody doesn't? I mean, who? It's terrible. It's terrible.
Joe G.
Scott Bakula.
I never saw it, so I don't know.
You know, I'm not very offended by Scott Bakula. I actually kind of like him as an actor, but he just had nothing to work with there. But I mean, God, like, there's nothing wrong with liking the original series. That's fine by me.
Maybe he likes it because, I mean, that series just transitioned so much into fan service. I want to turn this into a Star Trek podcast, but...
The original series?
Enterprise. I mean, more so than Voyager did into fan service.
Yeah, I mean, it was just bad. It was bad. I mean, like, I like this guy. I'm very interested in the origins of the Star Trek story, but man, that was not what I had in mind.
Yeah. I have to ask him what his favorite movie is.
Yeah, I hope it's not like Nemesis or
Generations.
Oh God, Generations. Anyway, before we get too far down the nerd hole, we should wrap this up.
You
so,
like Generations?
Generations was awful.
Dude, Saucer Separation.
Speaking of fan service, oh my gosh. Let's get
such an awful, awful film. I mean, you know, there's
I guess I gotta rewatch awful. That one.
There's awful and then there's awful, awful. And that is the latter.
I mean, you bring in Malcolm McDowell, the quintessential like B sci-fi movie villain.
Malcolm McDowell is pretty awesome too. Yeah, he was the villain in Wing Commander, but he's pretty good too. But he again had nothing to work with.
Exactly.
And yeah, just bad, bad movie. And did you like Nemesis?
I never saw Nemesis. Oh wait, yeah, I did. No, that's it.
Okay, so if you would kindly email us your questions to answer on next week's show, we would very much appreciate it. You can send them to us at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com or at the number which Andy will now read.
Oh, be sure to call our toll-free number, 877-404-1337, extension 724.
Can we start charging a toll? I want a toll. No, no, we're not. We're not charging a toll.
And also, if anybody's at PAX, if you want to send a question from PAX at that number, that'd be really super cool. You should do it.
Yeah, yeah, that's actually a good idea. If you're at PAX and not like a question, yeah. You don't have to send a question, but your impression.
Tell us what you're liking. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if you see something cool there. Yeah, definitely.
Or you also can tell Evan or I in person and say hi.
No, don't do that.
That'd be shiny.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, yeah, come up and touch Evan. Just touch him.
Ah, I hate that.
What's not to like? Yeah, so, and also you can subscribe to the magazine at pcgamer.com. Please do. All right, then. Until next week, for myself, Evan Lottie, and Andy Bauman, this has been the PC Gamer Podcast.
You're live. PC Gamer Podcast, you're live. Fine, go ahead.
I thought that was the caller. What?
Oh, no.
And Brad, thanks for joining us. And you can segue from there. Or you can clip that in.
Snip, snip.
Why, yes, I can!